Good morning, honorable members, support staff, the National Treasury on the platform, members of the media, members of the public. You are all welcome. Today we are meeting with the FFC and the PBO on the 21 Division of Revenue Amendment Bill and the 2021 Adjustment Appropriation Bill. So they'll be making presentations to us. Darren, do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chairperson, we received three apologies. It's from Ms. Dikhale, Mr. Sekima, and Ms. Peters.
Thank you so much, Darren. Just a second. Darren, who's leading PPO today?
It's Dr. Zanzi, Chairperson.
FFC?
FFC, I'm not sure, Chairperson, but I see Cheng is in, and the CEO is also in, Dr. K. Brown, so I'm not sure, and Michael Sachs is in.
Okay, that's fine.
Not sure who from those are going to lead, Chair.
Commissioners, you are all welcome. I'm sure once the doctor, if she's available, she'll let us know. Because I'm starting with the FFC. Can I allow the FFC to come in? We are locating 30 minutes. So I see Dr. Mbava is in the meeting. Dr. Mbava, the commissioners and the FSC staff, you are all welcome. Dr. Janchis and the team, you are definitely welcome. We'll start with FSC, Dr. Mbava, and we'll allocate 30 minutes to the team. So as I give you to Dr. Mbava, I'll expect to bring back my meeting exactly 30 minutes after you've started. Dr. Mbava.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. It's a great pleasure for the FFC to be here today. We are here to present and make our submission. I have commissioners with me as well on the platform, as well as the secretariat. Chairperson, if you allow me, I have my own opening statement that I would like to just contextualize our briefing.
Dr. Mbava, we are in your hands. The next 30 minutes is yours.
Okay, thank you.
Please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The recent economic... ...as a foundation for a sustained economic recovery and a stable fiscal path. However, threats to economic recovery continue to mount with pre-existing structural bottlenecks that severely constrained growth. Intermittent energy supplies, unresolved corruption, poor policymaking, and execution culminate in the loss of confidence or increased borrowing costs for the bonds we issue. South Africa must seek to avoid withdrawing its fiscal support to vulnerable citizens too early and signal to the public that its debt levels are sustainable in the long run by eliminating leakages and executing reprioritizations that are productive and constructive. The Commission, Chairperson and members, agrees that the revenue windfall should not be fully committed to further expanding expenditures that have already grown far beyond our means of revenue. Instead, the revenue windfall should be used to defray as much as possible the structural budget deficit and offload the growing debt service costs with redemption requirements. National debt and state-owned enterprises remain a glaring binding constraint to growth and risk to fiscal sustainability. Debt service cost is the fastest growing expenditure line item with a 10% annual average growth rate over the 2022 MTEF, and debt service costs account for 12% of total consolidated total spending in 2021, rising to 16% in 2024-25. The detrimental effect of debt service costs crowding out social programs could lead to the total collapse of basic and social services as funds intended for core spending are diverted to servicing the debt. The Commission therefore acknowledges the difficulties in moderating debt growth within a subdued economic environment and recommends improvements in cost efficiencies of spending and in closing the fiscal leakages to offset the growing deficit and debt. The Commission welcomes the 2021 medium-term budget policy statement tabled by the Minister of Finance and in particular notes the government's efforts to maintain a modest expenditure growth while making sure that spending areas are preserved. However, the Commission remains firm on its stance that the need to exercise financial restraint to achieve fiscal prudence must not come at a net cost of the socio-economic conditions of our people to regress. With those opening statements, Chairperson and members, I wish to hand over to the head of our research to take us through the briefing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Chair and members. Let me share my slide, but at the same time, just to add a little bit more, is that this presentation will, of course, be focusing on the 2021 division of revenue and amendment bill, as well as the adjustments appropriation bill. To begin, though, it is always useful to remind ourselves that, first of all, this is ultimately only one pot of money that we are dividing. And so to divide that pot, it's a straight cut, zero-sum game, essentially, that as we want to commit perhaps more money to one sector or function, it ought to the money ought to have come out somewhere else. If we want to put more money into education, come out of money must come out of X national departments or Y provinces or Z municipalities or all of three. And so with that, a second point to relating to the first is that since it is a zero-sum game, there are two parts to the question. So not just that the money must go somewhere, but also where it must come from. And very often we find ourselves answering the first part and emphasizing where the money must go, but not so much where it must come from. And I submit that it's only answering 50% of the question. So with that, this time, Chair, we are focusing especially on sections 3, 4, 5, 6, and 8 of our submission. And hand over to Sasha, please. Thank you, Sasha.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee and other colleagues. Chair, if you may please move to the next slide. So these next few slides provide an overview of the in-year spending adjustments that were affected during 2021-22. And the big in-year spending adjustment came with a 32.9 billion Rand second special appropriation bill, which was tabled in August. And as members will recall, the largest adjustment there was to the social development vote, and that was in order to test grant, which amounted to 26.7 billion. Then with the tabling of the 2021 NTBPS, further adjustments were made to the 2021-22 in-year spending. And the larger ones are the 20.5 billion to fund the increased costs of the 2021 public sector wage agreement. And as we know, the bulk of that is at the provincial level. The second significant adjustment was to fund the implementation of the second phase of the presidential employment initiative. And the second phase has a more distinct focus on youth unemployment. The third significant adjustment was the funding to assist Denal in meeting its obligations, which amounted to about 3 billion. Then finally, the fourth adjustment was to fund the purchase of vaccines, and this was in the amount of 2.3 billion. So these were the large adjustments during 2021-22. And if we move to the next slide, please, Jen. The other categories that usually get reported on in the adjustment appropriation bill relates to the rollovers, which amount to 2.8 billion. And we list on that slide the departments that are responsible for the largest portion of that 2.8 billion. Underspending amounted to 2 billion, and the department driving this was the Department of Transport, and the underspending is in respect of the public network transport grant. And underspending in this conditional grant is responsible for about 69% of that total underspent amount of 2 billion. Then in terms of how all this in-year spending adjustments were funded, it was largely through drawdown on the contingency reserve, 9 billion there, using infrastructure funds that were not assigned to votes, around 4 billion, and as well as projected underspending by national government departments, and also the higher than anticipated tax revenue for 2021. Moving to the next slide, please, Jane. So in terms of the Commission's views on the in-year spending adjustment, we believe that the SOEs continue to be a drain on the fiscus. We have heard about the need to restructure, but we know that action has been slow in this regard. Likewise, regarding a sustainable approach to managing the public sector wage bill, and on this issue, we will await further details regarding the public sector remuneration strategy, which is, according to the MTB-based document, under development. No timeline regarding completion was and we anticipate that the strategy will provide a blueprint for this key spending item, which is also a key risk to the fiscus. Finally, we also welcome the implementation of the Youth Focused Employment Initiative, and hopefully it will prove effective in building skills that will assist our youth in finding full-time employment. Moving to the next slide, please, Jen. The next one. Thank you. The next two slides provide a sense of government's consolidated expenditure plans over the next 3 years, and we look at it by functional category. And I guess the first point is that total consolidated spending will narrow in 2022-23, this next year, the next financial year, and we will see it decline by 2.5% in nominal terms. When we look at the distribution of consolidated spending, the learning and culture cluster will continue to receive the largest share of the spending. It receives on average 20% of total consolidated expenditure. The second largest item is social development, and this is where your social security grant sit. And then the third largest item is your debt service costs. And that's in terms of the absolute amounts. When we look at the bottom shaded part of that table, it illustrates the year-on-year growth in nominal terms. So the third column there in the shaded part of that table shows the projected nominal growth between 2021 and 2022. So what we can expect next year. And I'll focus on this because we know that what will happen in 2023 and 2024 is subject to change over the next year or so. But according to the 2021 MTBBS, what we can expect next year, quite a wide spread. I think there are only three spending areas that are not projected to decline. The first is your debt service costs, projected to grow quite strongly by 12.6%. So it's the third highest spending area after learning and culture and social development. And in terms of growth, it's the fastest grower. The second item illustrating category by around 8%. And then the third or final area where positive growth is expected is the economic development cluster, which is set to grow by 5.5%. So these trends allude to what is being protected, and we know then that government has chosen to put particular emphasis on protecting delivery of basic services, because we know that spending on the local equitable share allocation, water and
window. On the conditional grants, we see some small growth, also very low, 0.6% over the MTF. But looking at the outer years, there is negative growth on the local government equitable share. Next slide, the implications of this particular growth rates. As I've mentioned, on the local government equitable share, the Commission is concerned that the poor and vulnerable will not be protected over the MTF, and as well as the progressive realization of the basic rights is really at risk at over the MTF. As we can see from that graph, that the growth rates in real terms are really low over the MTF. Next slide on conditional grants. We also see the same picture, especially the two outer years where growth will be minus 0.2% and 0.4% negative growth in those two outer years. So on that one, the Commission is concerned that this low growth on conditional grants and negative growth in the outer years will not only impact negatively service delivery, but it will also impact negatively the recovery process in the local government sector, as the sector is moving out of, or the sector at recovery processes, especially after this COVID pandemic. So ideally, conditional grants should exhibit some upward growth over the 21 MTF, in line with government's infrastructure-driven economic recovery program. For this particular program to succeed, there is need for conditional grants, especially infrastructure conditional grants, to be on the upward trend. Then next slide is on a number of changes in some conditional grants. Let me move on to the last slide on the local government on recommendations. I think there are four recommendations there I want to highlight. The first one is that, which I think Sasha has pointed out, that the Commission believes that expenditure moderation, we see some expenditure moderation in provinces, in national government departments. What the Commission is saying there is that there is need for this to be followed by comprehensive reports from the affected government departments, indicating to Parliament how they are going to manage these tighter budgetary constraints, and how they will push in service delivery, especially on social services. On the PS, we recommend that there must be protection on social services. This also applies to the local government equitable share, that there is need to protect the vulnerable who rely on these particular transfer instruments for their survival. On the local government, the Commission implores coalition councils to shun adversarial politics and place people at the center of their decision making. And also, the government should set in programs and resources to capacitate new councillors. And lastly, the Commission recommends the government to protect the LES, as its continuous decline will compromise gains achieved in the progressive realization of basic rights. Those are the local government slides.
Thank you, Mkuduri. Let me hand over to Sabelo for the focus on compensation of employees, as it's extremely relevant, especially for the provincial sphere of government, please.
Okay, thank you, Jen. Good morning to honorable members. What I'll do here, I'll just take you through some of the key issues that I imagine that you found with respect to the compensation of employees. And these issues have been, to a certain extent, been touched on by previous presenters. Okay, what we are noting here with respect to the compensation of employees is that this part continues to take a large chunk of our fiscal, as it absorbs about 41% of government revenue. That was in 2019-2020. And then by 2020-2021, that increased to about 47% of government revenue. And that shows the manner in which this is unsustainable with respect to the fiscal. And then again, compensation of employees as a percentage of total expenditure, we highlighted that is one of the issues that is of a concern because it remains high. If you look at the graph that we have there, it's above 25%. It has been above 25%. If you check, look around 2016-17 financial year, and it has been at least constant until 2018-19. And it only started declining in 2019-20 up to 2021-22. But again, what we're highlighting here is that while there's been a slight decrease in compensation of employees in the past few years as a percentage of total expenditure, but this decrease is insignificant in bringing about the quantum of decrease to the wage bill required to ensure a budget balance surplus. And you know that since we've highlighted that this constitutes a huge percentage of government expenditure, if government has been successful in terms of reducing its expenditure of fiscal contribution, and then the consumer of employees is one of the key things that should be addressed or looked at. And then here again, what we've done, we highlighted some of the key drivers of the rising compensation of employees. And then in the main, what we're highlighting is that it has been the number of employees in the public sector that kept on increasing, as well as the above inflation increases in salaries of the public servants in the past. And then now what you can see, or the other thing that we're highlighting here, is that there's no link or there's no evidence that would show that those increase in the public sector employee numbers is associated or is linked with increase in productivity. So that is one of the things that we're highlighting here. Okay, here we're then noting that what has been happened is that in recent years, particularly in 2020-2021, comparing 2020-2021. What we're highlighting here is that the government has tried to reduce the spending, particularly in some of the key sectors that include education, police, and defense. But again, with respect to health, those efforts were undermined by the COVID-19, since more resources were required to ensure that the effect of COVID-19 is minimized or to mitigate it. So, but all in all, you see that these decreases are insignificant. Can you go back to that slide so that I can finish? Oh, okay. As you can see here, there has been an increase in headcount with respect to health. Then what we're highlighting here is what the Commission has indicated before, that it is the Commission decided the importance of the strategic public employees reduction strategy to ensure that service delivery is not negatively affected. So in the process of reducing a number of employees and cutting the wage bill, but the government should be aware and make sure that this doesn't negatively affect service delivery. Next slide. Here we're just highlighting some of the key recommendations, which are two. The first one on the fiscal risk, what we are emphasizing is the importance of relooking or considering the position of SOEs guarantees given to or guarantees given to the SOEs. And the second step here would be to establish an SOE governance framework with public reporting criteria that clearly defines details and precise profitability and non-financial objectives for transparency reasons. And secondly, on the compensation of employees or compensation costs, the Commission recommends that the government should develop a long-term plan and in an incremental manner. So it mustn't just be a once-off and a big shock to the system and then in a full one again. And then those are two. And the importance of linking this to productivity, those are two recommendations that are putting forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sabrina. Thank you, Honorable Chair members. So that is our together with that, especially on the amendment bills relevant. Ultimately, we welcome the amendment bills as tabled, and as despite the cuts and all the reprioritizations happening within that those bills, in terms of numbers and the MPF, we emphasize, however, the need that second last point there, that government needs to monitor the impacts, those impacts, net impacts, implications on social services delivery, basic service delivery through regular reporting system and structures to this committee and select committee on appropriation, as well as all relevant sector portfolio of committees of parliament to account. Thank you very much. May I hand over back to you, Chair?
Thank you so much, Chen. To you, Chairperson of the House.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mbava and the team. You are well on time, well appreciated, setting a good example. Dr. Janchis and your team, please come in.
Good morning, Chairperson. My light is off, and it's still on my light. Good morning, Chairperson, and thank you so much, panel members, and good morning, Coalition Platform. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson, to bring the committee in this regard. I'm with the team on the platform who will take us through detailed presentations. I just want to give a quick few remarks before giving the colleagues to give us detailed presentation. I think what I want to do, I just want to reinforce some of the points that we made last week during the discussion, the fiscal statement discussion. I think what we emphasized there, Chair, members, is that the fiscal policy stance is to be seen and used in light of support for the required economic development and economic growth and support for households over and above addressing the debt and deficit issues as the current objectives are. I think we know that when we look at the adjustment, which we know that 11 billion is provisionally allocated to support residential employment program and support the livelihood program, which includes also micro enterprise and subsistence farming in that regard. Further allocations support government salary adjustments, which also support, will support the households. But Chair and members, I think what we emphasized last week that we believe that the discussion and debate around social spend is important and should continue but not be open-ended, particularly also take into account those who are affected by poverty and inequality in this country. We believe, we emphasize that the fiscal consideration that focus only on cutting expenditure has disproportionately affected poor households and is likely to continue to affect the poor households in the current proposals as they are. I think, we quickly did a high level research on using the 2019 data sets, to talk about this issue of social spending. And that has shown that actually South Africa expenditure on social spending as a percentage of GDP is actually smaller than many other countries which have low inequality than we have in South Africa. In particular, when I look at the country with higher Gini coefficients in the OECD, which is sitting at 0.45 as a Gini coefficient compared to us, 0.62, they spend more than 12% of GDP on social spending, you know, and we spend actually just around 6% of GDP on social spending. Therefore, our view in that regard is there could be more room for government to expand its social spending representative GDP when compared to other countries. More so, take into account the potential macroeconomic and social implications of such spending. We continue to raise underspending trends. The concerns is particularly thinking about the potential multiplier effect, in particular when you look at our high-level 5-year longitudinal analysis shows that actually payment for capital assets is the main central underspending area over the years, and again, it's a worrying factor thinking about the potential implications in that regard. We'll provide more details in regard. The last point, Chair, as part of open remarks, really talks about the provincial local government accounts for significant public expenditure and is a major public employer. And when we look at the discussion in literature as well in potential expense shows that in a three-tier governance system, a capable local government is a prerequisite and necessary to realize service delivery goals and objectives set out in the national government. Therefore, it's very important that our local government have sufficient technical and administrative capacity to realize some of the developmental initiatives set out there. There has to also be greater cooperation between the provincial and local government spheres in relation to fiscal powers in this regard. Our recent brief, Chair, on looking at the revenue decline on local governments, we noted that the success of the implementation of the district development model largely is linked and dependent on certain government sectors, policies, and budget. Therefore, in particular, you look at public enterprise, minerals, resources, and other sectors there. So therefore, taking away budgets from those or lack of monitoring of those sectors have direct implications for the district development model. Chairman, those are my opening remarks. I'll come in later during the question time. So I'll give Dr. Olandi to take us through with the team, the detailed presentation. Thank you so much, Chair and members. Thank you. Dr. Olandi?
Thank you, Dumisani. If we can just go to the introduction slide. Okay, Dumisani has covered some of it. You can continue with the next slide. Next slide. So, good morning, honourable members, and thank you, and also good morning to all the guests. I will take you through the adjustments budget section. So the total estimated expenditure increases by 15 billion in the current financial year. The adjustments to the vote appropriations are offset against the provisional allocations and contingency reserve. Members, we are not going to duplicate what the Treasury already presented to you, but we are going to provide you with more detail on the significant and unforeseeable economic and financial events. We will also provide more detail on the expenditure earmarked in the 2021 budget speech. And then we will also go over the rollovers and the deferments. Just at the bottom there, members to note is that the adjustments also include a contingency reserve of 2.96 billion and provisional allocations of 11 billion that have not been assigned to votes. Members, I may be wrong, but I'm not sure if this phenomena has happened before. The Treasury can correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen in previous adjustments budget that there is still a contingency reserve previously. Next slide. So in terms of the national allocations, members, the baseline for 2021-22 as estimated in the 2020 MTF was between 3.3% and 40.7% higher than the 2021 revised estimate. So after reductions in 2021 to the baseline, most departments in the table still showed a positive The yellow highlights are those departments that did not request additional funding in the adjustments. So three of these departments also declared COE funds unspent. That was public enterprises with 17 million, higher education and training with 85 million, communications and digital technologies by 8 million. These three departments also increased the baseline for 2021 by 40.7%, 14.6% and 22.8% from the 2021 revised estimates. The highlighted departments also show a positive change from the 2020 revised estimates except for Parliament that did not adjust the COE budget. Shows that departments still have fiscal space to increase personnel numbers or implement increases. A negative value means that the departments will have to reduce personnel numbers through the different options provided by government. So although the negative value of 5.6% in health is a concern, it should be noted that the numbers only reflect COE of national departments. Next slide. So members, the Presidential Employment Initiative will support the creation of more than 440 short-term jobs until March 2022. Other interventions are expected to catalyze growth and job creation. The allocation for livelihood support covers income support for self-employed people in areas such as subsistence farming and micro-enterprises. The table provides the detail of how departments will allocate these funds. For example, in corporate governance, transfers will go to the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. National Treasury will increase the Neighbourhood Development Partnership grant. In higher education and training, funds will be transferred to the National Skills Fund and also for graduate assistance. In women, youth and persons with disabilities, the National Youth Agency for Youth Development will receive 430 million. Employment and labor transfers, the money will go to transfers for GTAC, for the Jobs Fund. Forestry, fisheries and the environment will go for additional EPWP employment. And then at the bottom, you will see the equitable share that will be allocated. 6 billion was allocated for the Basic Education Employment Initiative and 120 million for the appointment of social workers and 350 million for staff and assistant nurses. Next slide. So members, before we discuss the rollovers, just a reminder of the BFMA regulations in terms of the rollovers. So in terms of part three on planning and budgeting, it determines that unspent funds on payments for capital assets may only be rolled over to finalize projects or assets or asset acquisitions still in progress. Savings on transfers and subsidies may not be rolled over for purposes other than originally voted for. Compensation of employees may not be rolled over. And a maximum of 5% of department's payments for goods and services may be rolled over. Next slide. So members, the presidency requested rollovers for the implementation of action plans to address gender-based violence, and they're also rolling over funds for compensation of employees. And then in correctional services, they are rolling funds over for goods and services, such as the procurement of uniforms, ammunition, pepper spray, etc., as well as the procurement of pistols. So these are mainly goods and services items. Agriculture, land and land reform and rural development is rolling money over from the first phase of the presidential employment program. And then this, you will also see in this adjustments budget, additional funds were allocated for this purpose, but the money from the previous allocation has not been spent and will be rolled over. The same with sports, arts and culture. They also requested rollovers from the first phase of the presidential employment initiative. Water and sanitation is requesting a rollover for operational payments for the Vaal River pollution remedial mediation project, and that will increase the regional bulk infrastructure grant. Next slide. So members, in the rules in terms of the virement states that an accounting officer for a department may utilize the saving in the amount appropriated under the main division within a vote towards the defrayment of excess expenditure under another main division. But it may not exceed 8% of the amount appropriated under that main division. This section does not authorize the utilization of savings specifically and exclusively appropriated funds. It does not authorize an amount appropriated for transfers to another institution, and it also does not authorize an amount appropriated for capital expenditure in order to defray current expenditure. Next slide. So in terms of the request, and the National Treasury presented this in detail, members, so the request to Parliament is basically to approve virements or shifts from schools infrastructure backlog grant for workbooks. They're also requesting, the higher education is requesting to shift funds from vacant posts to the National Student Financial Aid. And health is actually requesting for virements from the health NHI to other grants. And also to note there is that they are asking a shift for more than 8%. So the shift amounts to 23.2%. Women, youth and persons with disability is requesting to shift funds from consultants to compensation. Justice is also requesting a virement above 8%. The police wants to shift money from the construction and upgrading of police stations to the for overtime payments. And then Department of Environmental Affairs wants to shift money from the expanded public works program to other institutions. And then the last four is also just asking to shift funds from transfers for other purposes. And then you will see small business, tourism and trade and industry also requesting Parliament to approve amounts to be shifted more, that is more than 8%. Next slide. Members, this slide shows the in-year performance of national departments post the adjustments. So the table includes national 50% and more than 60% of the adjustments budget in the first 6 months of the 2021 financial year. The slow spending department is military veterans at 27.7%, despite a reduction in the budget already. And the highlighted departments requested rollovers from last year, which might be the reason for the slow expenditure in the current financial year after the adjustments process. Next slide. So the composition of the adjustments of the top 10 votes. I will now hand over to my colleague Mapula to take you through the Division of Revenue section.
Thank you, Nilia. Good morning, honorable members. I'm going to take you through the Division of Revenue slide. Slide 15. Thank you, Siraj. So the 2021 Division of Revenue Amendment Bill provides for an increase in the expenditure of 3.6% for the current financial year, and there is no additional allocation for government through the Division of Revenue Bill. This reflects government's attempt to further support the economy consolidation with projected revenue larger than estimated. Next slide. So additional allocations in the additional allocations of 14.7 billion to the provincial equitable share for the wage agreement. And we also see an additional 6.47 billion allocated to the provincial equitable share for the presidential youth employment. Next slide. So in terms of the changes to the provincial and local government conditional grants, we see 81 million is added to the direct regional bulk infrastructure grant for the George local municipality. 150 million is reduced from the National Health Insurance indirect grant for the Limpopo Academic Hospital because of the delays experienced in the project. And 10 million is reduced from the health revitalization grant for the Western Cape for Klipfontein Hospital. This is because of the delays in the appointment of professional service providers for building design. And we see a 1.3 billion reduced from the public network grant for the city of Cape Town to align to its revised implementation plan of the My City Phase 2A project. And we see a 210 million is rolled over for the school infrastructure backlog grant to complete projects that are part of the sanitation appropriation for education initiatives. These funds are for schools in the Eastern Cape, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. Next slide. 97 million of the school infrastructure backlog grant is reprioritized from the goods and services portion of the Department of Basic Education for planning and oversight of the grant. And we also see 243 million being reprioritized from the various components of the National Health Insurance indirect grant to the Human Resource and Training Grant. And 582 million is rolled over in the indirect regional bulk infrastructure payment for the Vaal River Pollution Remediation Project in Emfuleni Local Municipality. And we also see 90 million is shifted from the direct component of the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant to the indirect component of the grant. Next slide. In terms of the division of revenue over the MTEF, we see that the provincial and municipal grants face multiple pressures over the medium term as government reduces spending growth and poor economic performance affects other revenue and funding sources. So over the 2022 MTEF period, transfers to provinces and municipalities in the form of equitable share and conditional grants are estimated to grow below inflation. And over the next 3 years, government proposes the allocation of 48.4% of available non-interest expenditure to national departments, 42% to provinces, and only 9.6% to local government. Next slide. In terms of changes to the provincial and local government equitable share, we see that the provincial equitable share is the main source of revenue for provinces, and it is made up of six components with education and health as the largest two components. So between 2022-2023 financial year and 2024-2025, changes will be phased into the health component, which accounts for 27% of the provincial equitable share. So this change follows a recent review that updated the risk-adjusted capitation index. So the last review was done in 2010. In the updated component, the standalone HIV variable will be integrated into other variables. So the three variables that will be added is going to be the premature mortality, a multiple deprivation index, and the sparsity. In terms of the local government equitable share, it will be updated to account for projected household growth, inflation, and estimated increase in bulk water, electricity costs over the MTEF period. Next slide. In terms of the changes to the provincial and local government conditional grants over the MTEF, We see changes in the HIV, TB, malaria, and community outreach grants. So from the 2022-2023 financial year, the grant will only consist of a comprehensive HIV and AIDS component, funding HIV and AIDS and TB related services. The grant will also be renamed as the District Health Program Grant. So the second one, the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, we see the colleges of agriculture having been shifted to the national government as well as the funding provided through this grant. And the Early Childhood Development Grant will be moved from the Department of Social Development to the Department of Basic Education from the financial year 2022-2023. And the Provincial Road and Maintenance Grant. So in the 2021 budget, an incentive component was allocated based on provincial performance using the main formula of the conditional grant. So due to the delays in developing the objective allocation criteria, the incentive component will be removed from the grant baseline for 2022-2023. So the National Treasury will continue to work with the Department of Transport to develop objective criteria for the incentives. So in terms of local government, changes in the local government conditional grants, we see the change in municipal infrastructure grants, the expansion of the scope of the grant to help municipalities improve their asset management practices, and has been delayed, so funds will not be allocated to a new indirect component of the grant at the beginning of 2022-2023, but funds may be transferred during the year if the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs does the work required to identify municipalities that need this intervention. Next slide. So in addition to the proposed changes that we have seen, the PBO has embarked on a project in looking at the efficiency and effectiveness of expenditure on conditional grants. So we assess the performance and the content of conditional grants of basic education, health, human settlement, agriculture, transport, conditional grants as reflected in the schedules to the DORA and reported in the 2019-2020 annual report and administered by the respective departments. What the analysis showed is that performance outputs or indicators were not well defined in most of these grants. There was a mismatch between expected outputs and actual outputs. There was a duplication of indicators or outputs. And in some instances, there was inconsistent or no reporting on actual non-financial information. In some instances, there were no targets set for the output, which becomes problematic. Overspending on some of the grants accompanied by underperformance or underspending that is accompanied by overperformance. So reporting on the performance was not measured against the set targets. There was also incomplete performance information. So the lack of proper in performance information on conditional grants in the annual reports of the department makes it difficult for the effectiveness of expenditure and impact of outputs delivered by government. Thank you. I'll hand over to Spetelo to continue with the last.
Is my camera on? Morning, members, and thank you, Mapula. I'm trying to sort out my okay. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm struggling on switching on my camera, but with your permission, I'll request to continue with my camera off.
Perfect.
That would be okay. Yeah. Thank you. In the next two slides, I'll be showing the historic trend of the National Department spending. This graph in front of us shows the expenditure by economic classification. Looking into the red column, amongst other classification, we can see that the payment for capital spending has been has been an ongoing underspending for that classification. And the public sector infrastructure update on the budget review in 2021, it shows that the public sector capital expenditure as a share of GDP has been declining since 2015. So expenditure on capital asset has been an issue for some time. And in the fiscal brief output that was released by our office earlier this month, we also highlighted the issue of underspending on capital assets. And if the government wants to address the issue of reduction in unemployment, poverty, economic growth, capital investment by public and the private sector are one crucial component that needs to be addressed urgently. Can we move to the next slide? During the adjustment budget, some departments request or they receive additional money, and some they have their budget reduced as a matter of reprioritization. So it would be useful to understand whether those departments that receive additional money or request additional money, they request it because they are overspending on their budget, or maybe because it's a matter of reprioritization, or because there are some other pressing issues that need attention or that need some allocation. So looking into this graph here, we see that there is a spiking out of the expenditure in the financial year 2019-2020 of the Social Development Department. And this was a result of an earlier payment of the April 2020 social grant in response to the COVID-19 lockdown measures. But leaving out this issue of social development, overall, we can see that generally departments, they tend to underspend on their budget. As we have seen on the slide previously presented by Nelia, that amongst other departments, the presidency, the COCTA, the agriculture and reform and rural development and water and sanitation are amongst the departments that requested or that have received additional money in the adjustment budget. And yet, they are amongst the department that are continuing to have underspending on their budget. So one may look at the, for an example, at the issue of the water and sanitation that is continuing to have underspending, yet we have a water which is a big problem in our country, and the department continues to have underspending. We can move to the next slide. In summary of our presentation, we note that the total estimated expenditure increased from 1.83 trillion to 1.89 trillion in the 2021-2022 financial year. The adjustment to vote appropriation are offset against the provincial allocation and contingency reserves and increased by 15 billion. Adjustment also include a contingency reserves of 2.9 billion and a provisional allocation of 11 billion that have not been assigned to at the time of the tabling of the adjustment budget. An analysis of the baseline for 2021-2022 as estimated in the 2020 MTEF show that the compensation of employee increased by 3.3% to 40.7% between the 2020 estimate. As my colleague noted in the previous slide, the presidential will only support the creation of more than 140,000 short-term jobs, but also aim to catalyze the growth and the job creation and provide the support for self-employed people. Next slide, Siraj. The provincial and municipal government face multiple pressures over the medium term because of the government reduction in spending growth and the poor economic performance that affects other revenue and the funding sources. So changes to equitable share formulas aim to improve equal revenue division in the provincial and local government. And also the changes to conditional grant structure will also be implemented in the financial year 2022-2023. So the PPO analysis of conditional grant suggests an improvement in administration of the grant in a form of the context, processing and reporting and monitoring. Chair, this is our submission as the office. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and honored members. We give it back to you, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, FFC and PBO. Honorable members, let's get to the questions. Let me get indications of who would like to interact with the presentations. You know how we do it? Honorable Matafa.
Honorable
Sonyano.
Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso. Any other honorable member?
Mlenzana, Sir President.
Honorable Mlenzana. Is that all honorable members? Okay, let's go back to us timing ourselves. I'll be generous and I'll give honorable members a maximum of 5 minutes. You don't need to use it, but that's your maximum. I stop you if you go beyond 5 minutes. I will start with Honorable Matafa.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, members of the media, and teams from FFC and PBO, as led by Dr. Mbava and Dr. Janchis. Chair, I just have a few comments and a few questions. Maybe let me start with the presentation from the FFC, where on slide 20, I see when they speak of debt servicing costs, the cost seems to be increasing from the current financial year to financial year 2024-2025. I just want to find out what could be the cost of that, because from a layman's point of view is that as the debt decreases, the cost should follow as well. Unless if maybe we are looking at the situation where the country is only servicing the interest part of the debt and not attempting at the principal facility. So I'm just interested to find out why their projection shows an increment in terms of the debt servicing cost. And one thing that is also picked up by both FFC and PBO is on the unspent funds in the transport votes. If it relates to the public transport network grant. This seems to be recurring to find out what could be the inhibiting factors or prohibiting factors to ensure these funds are spent. Because 1.9 billion on transport is a huge amount not to be picked up and questioned. Again, with FFC, on slide 27, Ntateng Nube speaks about capacitation of councillors. It's true, and we agree with the Commission that the resources must be set aside to ensure that upskilling does happen to hung municipalities' councillors, particularly for those that are formed through coalitions. But I think that we also need to also remember that we always lament on the shortage of skills in the administration as well. So I'm just interested to find out, is there any advice on from the FFC on how best we can ensure that the interventions by the National Treasury under the capacitation grant and SALGA's efforts put together in a manner that can be measured to ensure that both councillors as well as the administration are developed to reach and achieve the skills that are required in order to perform optimally. I mean, one cannot remember the report issued by SALGA, I think it was in October, that the councillors, about 62% of them, do not possess basic computer skills to ensure that they are able to interact with the reports as tabled in government and in council. Chair, the other point that was picked up by both PBO and FFC relates to the contingency reserve. I wonder if whether do we have anyone in the meeting from National Treasury who can help us understand what is this intended for? I mean, if you put resources aside, but you do not assign them to particular votes, are they accessed and how do we account on them? Because if it's a contingency reserve, there should be some sort of limitations as to how far it can be accessed and used for. On the reductions around the NHI, will I be correct to say that the NHI is no longer a government priority? Because I see it's reflected on slide 17 from PBO, 243 million is moving from NHI to human resource training grant. Is there a phasing out of NHI, or it's just that it's no longer a government priority? And I'm asking both the PBO and FFC, maybe based on their interaction with the report, they can be able to indicate what is their view. The last one, Chair, is on past performance by national votes. There's a very telling slide. It's just that it is not numbered, which speaks about past performance by national votes. And it reflects a declining spend for capital assets. PBO will correct me, but for me, it's a worrying factor. And a worrying factor because once you create assets, the balance sheet is enhanced, the balance sheet becomes healthier. Now, if we have a trend of a declining spend on capital assets, are we saying that we are sitting with an underperforming balance sheet? That's number one. Number two, are we saying that at this point in time, the state is failing to create assets of ownership for future generations? And for me, that is worrying, Chair, because we are sitting with a situation whereby we are pushing and punting infrastructure development as one of the catalysts to economic growth.
In Jari's time,
performance, you are not able to see that particular commitment to achieve that. Thank you very much, Chair. That was my last point. I really appreciate the time to participate, and thanks again for the presentations. They are really empowering. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Mushlenyan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, we welcome the report. And I just needed I had some clarity-seeking questions. My first question also starts with the debt service cost, which seems to be increasing. I just needed clarity, or is it maybe it's increasing because we have also increased our debt, or what's the situation in that one? To Fighter AD, I'll call him Fighter AD, I'm very generous today. To Fighter AD, Fighter AD spoke about the 1.9 trillion and the 23% inflation to provinces. My question that I wanted to ask Fighter AD is, if provinces are struggling to meet their obligation as we speak on education and health, what will it mean to the nation if if we are having cuts and the provinces must cut on the education and health? And furthermore, Chair, on that one, the conditional grants that are given to provinces is decreased, and then that might affect the project. Some projects may stop and some projects may slow down. It's project, because there's still other things that you, if a project was already in motion and you stop it, you still have to pay costs like security. And so is there any way not around it, Chair, to try and make sure that projects which were already in motion must be finalized as quickly as possible? And then to Faisal Mkhululi Ncube, we need to protect the poor and the vulnerable. And then what do you think must be done to protect the poor and the vulnerable, putting in mind that they are the large number of our society? If this expenditure moderation are going to touch on our poor and the vulnerable, What do you think must be done? And again, I think he needs to specify or needs to be done and who needs to do it and how it must be done on this extending the child moderation. Because I'm going to be specific, you know, the government of the day sometimes just run around. They don't even know what's happening or what they are doing. And then to Dr. Janki, Dr. Economic growth that we keep on talking about, I don't see it. I don't see it going to benefit the people who need it the most. I don't see it how it will benefit the township economy. I don't see it how it's going to benefit the informal sector, which employs a lot of people, by the way. So maybe I am missing something, or you can school me on what it needs to be done. You know, how is this economic growth going to be directed into the informal sector and into the township economy? And lastly, Chairperson, I just want to touch up on this issue of 440,000 short-term jobs that they keep on talking about. First and foremost, I want to understand, Chair, this 440,000 jobs that the is a presidential initiative. Which sector are we talking about, first and foremost? But secondly, why are they short-term? Why can they not be permanent jobs? Permanent jobs that give security to our people. Why can it not be permanent jobs that give financial stability to our people? Why must it continue to be, we continue to be told about short-term, and even that short-term, no one specifies it to us how short is short. Maybe it's 3 months. What are you going to do with 3 months when you've been hungry for years? Maybe it's 6 months. But why can we not make it permanent job that's going to benefit our people fully? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Sanyana, thank you. Honorable Taiso.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for receiving these presentations from both the PBO and Fiscal Commission. There's a number of areas that I wanted to talk about, but I'll see time where does it put me. Firstly, on the presentation by FFC, there's a talk on the MTBPS that you say measures to exercise control should not come at an expense of services for the poor, or providing services for the poor, or catering for the poor. And at the same time, you're saying looking or in the long run, you foresee a situation whereby during the MTF, the poor would not be protected, especially when it comes to conditional grants. Now, I'm not sure what are you actually saying on these two statements. I wanted us to get a very clear message. What are you actually saying here? On the statement on the MTBPS and your focus on the MTF, what are you actually saying there? Because it's like you wanted to tell us something at the committee, but you stopped short of now finishing it. Now, let me come to the issue on the non-expenditure or underspending by department. Some you say there are serial non-expenditure or poor expenditure departments. You mentioned there the particular department, you said agriculture, water and sanitation. I think it's not good, Chairperson, that we, having such serious challenges of water in the country. You go to your City Bay, you go to your Bloomwater, you know, this, and even other number of places in the country where a problem of water and sanitation. And we should be having this serious understanding. I don't know how many times have we tried to engage the department. Perhaps as a committee, we have to go back and really engage very seriously with the departments, more especially where an extra money was allocated on request by these departments. But yet the outcome are so poor. Each time when we interact, there hasn't been much progress around the same additional funding which was done. And given the the outlook that was portrayed over the past month with the local government elections, it should be sending us a very clear message that how we should fast track all the process from all fronts. So now my other question it was on the military veterans, but we shouldn't be having the situation which has just occurred recently, whilst we have in the department underspending, so having such an underspending. We definitely have to, there must be a way to address that situation, especially of the military veterans. On health revitalization grants, we're having this reduction. Obviously, I want to agree with my colleague, Honorable Matafa, that it does seem that now NHI is no longer a priority. Given the situation of some of the dilapidated infrastructure of the health institutions, I will mention, for instance, a regional hospital in the Eastern Free State, Puta di Chaba or Kwakwa, Mufumadi Manapo Hospital. It's an old institution which needs to be revitalized, and you look forward now to do that or to improve that, but with the reduction of on the health revitalization grant, it's not possible for that to can happen. So I'm just concluding, Chairperson. I think I want to agree because it's going to cause a serious problem moving forward with this, given the situation that it has portrayed. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Mlindzana.
Thank you, Chairperson. The reason that I'm smiling, as you are saying, injury time to Comrade Kaiso, is that today it looks like we have got much chunk to chew in front of us, and there's no time. As a result, I've also tried to prioritize my questions, and some are consolidated. Like, for instance, let me start, of course, by welcoming the presentation. Hence, this host of questions, Chairperson. These two presentations have been thought-provoking. Chairperson, I'm now starting from the bottom. On division of revenue, look, Chairperson, I've also decided to club now my questions for both FFC and the Parliamentary Budget Office. They will share the questions, and if they could both respond. On division of revenue, I've clubbed it with conditional grants deliberately. One, are conditional grants still conditional? Looking at the presentation, the under-expenditure, the perpetual under-expenditure, let me put it like that, non-reporting, tendencies and all. I'm trying to be brief, Chairperson. But all that revolves around your conditional grants. Also on division of revenue. Particularly the Parliamentary Budget Office, consistently trying to arouse or jog our memories regarding the baselines. At what stage should we try to move a little from the baseline approach to budgeting as per the need? I don't want to call it zero-based budgeting deliberately. I'm saying budgeting according to need or budgeting as per the need. Let me jump, Chairperson. Now, Chair, on the compensation of employees or the wage bill. Here, Chair, I'm introducing a question deliberately. Is there anywhere where government still does what it used to do, where the number of employees would be informed by the task or job allocation and performance per employee, such that then we would be able to say, yes, we do have to cut on the number of employees so as to manage the wage bill, or we do want a lean structure, but which is effective per entity and per department. And lastly, relating to that, Since when have we ever relooked and reassessed the employees, particularly when it comes to ghost employees? Some employees are called ghost employees because a particular welcome Mlenzana, who is father to Uzola, died, but would remain within the employ, but budgeted for, but not paid because he, she is dead. Hence now you would see that under expenditure when it comes to the wage bill. How is that being managed? And lastly, I think I'm trying to pass it. This one is the last one. On management of expenditure at local government in particular. We have been talking about this. And what we have been saying is that punishing a particular institution which does need to spend by taking back the money to the treasurer's kitty is not, by the way, punishing the entity or the government institution, but you are rather punishing the end user, the electorate, the voter, the community member. Can we be advised on how best to deal with this? In the line of realizing the district development model, where do we locate this? Who is who into this? Where is treasury? What role should treasury be playing? Is it not time that perhaps treasury is allocated per district to monitor the expenditure, such that we don't have this nice song about under expenditure? Chairperson, I will come back if you give me time. Otherwise, yeah, let me stop there for now.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. I get the message loud and clear. But what I've realized is that in other presentations, we end up asking questions and not giving enough time to the presenters to respond, but yourself and Honorable Kaiso, you were lucky because I also allocated you the 2 minutes from Honorable Hlonyana that she didn't use. But as you said,
thanks, Chairperson. Appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Must also thank Honorable Hlonyana.
Thanks. Fighter.
Okay, honorable members, let's have a second round of questions, and again I'll be generous. I'll give you 5 minutes maximum, and please make sure that you don't have anything remaining. You finish everything within that 5 minutes. I'll start with Honorable Matafa. I've got questions that you want to raise.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I will only have 1.5 question. Yeah. One is the reduction due to project delays, particularly as it relates to the 10 million for Klipfontein Hospital. The reason that is finished there is that there's a delay in the appointment of a professional service provider. I'm not sure if whether from the presentation by National Treasury, PBO and FFC have picked up what is the current situation as far as this is concerned. Is there an effort to appoint? And also, what is the impact on this particular issue as it relates to the provision of health services in the Western Cape? And I'm saying, Chair, that it was a 1.5 question because there is also a reduction on the delay of completion of a Limpopo Academic Hospital. Now, in Gauteng, when I'm in Gauteng, I will see vehicles written Limpopo Health Department transporting patients from Limpopo to George Mokhari in Garankuwa, in Tshwane. So I'm not sure if whether that delay, is it something that is being given attention and there's a priority to ensure that that particular project is completed timeously? And what does it mean when these funds are moved? Is there no intention of completing the project? And what costing has then been made to ensure that whatever that is moved does not impact on the project? The last one, Chair, is just on the the school infrastructure backlog grant, where 210 million was allocated. However, 97 million of that has been reprioritized, meaning that the balance is now 113 million. Why the 210 million? Why is it also prudent to lose 97 million? Did we experience anything in the programs, or is the money of 113 million enough and sufficient to ensure that these projects are completed in time? The worrying factor there, Chair, is that these schools are located in the Free State, the Eastern Cape, and Limpopo. And we know that those are the provinces with the highest need as far as infrastructure are concerned, particularly on sanitation. Thank you, Chair. Those are my inputs for the second round. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matafa, so that I don't forget this one. Support staff, the issues which I think they mainly relate to underspending or transfer of funds, but mainly underspending. Can you please note those departments, because we must write to them as this committee, and they must give us full explanation as to what is happening around that, so that we don't just end up by raising those issues. And I think we'll see how we craft those letters and we write directly to them. For instance, Department of Health, they must tell us this academic hospital in Limpopo has been there for forever, but why is it not being finished? And they must give us some time as to when exactly are they finishing. And similar things which have been raised, I think we should start interacting directly with some of these departments and not through a national treasury. I think that helps, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Shanyana, please come.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have one question and a comment. My first question, Chair, I want to understand, maybe we can be taken into confidence. The structural adjustments that have been imposed in this country, is there an institution that we are owing that is imposing the structural adjustments to the Republic of South Africa, or is just the ANC government thinking that we should have structural adjustments? You know, I've been thinking about this, Chair, and it's been eating me for days, and I can no longer hold myself. I need that question to be answered. Is there a specific institution? And if there is, can it be named, Chair, so that we are all in the same level? But secondly, Chair, my comment will be, it is amazing how we always reduce spending where it affects the poor, right? But like like health and education, but we don't want to reduce spending on those blue lights of those ministers. We are not cutting the bloated cabinet. We are not cutting the exorbitant salaries which are earned by the ministers. We are not cutting those useless sham deputy ministers, which must just go. There is no need for deputy ministers in this country. So I really wish that when this cutting happens, Chair, it should be directed there where we're just spending money for no reason whatsoever. But what continuing to cut, and we now begin to see that this cutting is affecting the most important sectors in our communities, which is health and education. And unfortunately, our health department is limping as it is. I don't know if you cut, it means you just want to collapse if we're going to continue cutting. And the education, you still have schools which are still mud houses and kids which are still studying outside. What are you cutting there? So Chair, that needs to be re-looked properly when this Congress builds this budget. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Senyana. Honorable Kaiso,